Hello, everybody. It is time for our chill Q&A hangout. If you would like to grow as an artist and you can't take an art class, we've got everything you need here at Art Prof: critiques, tutorials, professional development, and workshops. Tell me how your week has been. What projects do you have going on? And of course, if you have questions, you can put them into the chat, and I'd be happy to answer. I have been knee deep editing, as always, and I've been thinking a lot about color. And I'm so lucky to have Lauren on staff because she knows infinitely more about color than I do. And I was just finishing up editing on a video where she talks about the differences between pearl red and cadmium red medium. And oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. I've never heard of pearl red before. Who here has heard of pearl red? Because I felt like kind of an idiot when I saw her video. How did I not know about this color? I mean, cad red and me, we go way back. Although I have to say, I prefer cadmium red light. Cadmium red light, it has more yellow than cadmium red medium has in it. And so it has a luminosity, and it's just a little more orange than cadmium red medium. Of course, it depends on what you're painting, but especially for painting flush tones, I found cadmium red light to be especially helpful. I just felt like, at least when I used it, cadmium red medium, it was too powerful. I didn't know how to take control of it. And cadmium red light, sweet spot. Powerful, but with enough yellow that you can get some luminosity. So I would love to hear from people. What is your favorite red? Because my other favorite red would be alizarin crimson. And alizarin crimson is so dark in value that I almost think it's verging on being purple. And I do use it a lot to use purple in a lot of paintings. And so alizarin crimson and me, we are so good together. Alizarin crimson, so good for mixing black. If you mix it with viridian, oh, fantastic. So we have a question from Judy, who says, do you prefer to buy all the colors or make your own? It's funny, I'm different depending on the type of paint. For example, with watercolor, I actually prefer having a lot of different colors because watercolor is so thin. I actually think that mixing watercolor mixtures in advance is sort of fruitless because depending on the amount of water that's in the brush and how things are laid on top of the paper, it's not like acrylic and oil where you have like a blob of paint that you can actively mix and really control. Watercolor, you can't really do that. I tend to like two blues, two yellows, and two reds, and sometimes I'll have a brown. Usually it's burnt umber. Sometimes it's burnt sienna, but sometimes I don't like burnt sienna because that has too much yellow in it. And I need something that's a little bit darker in value because I know that if I have too many colors on my palette, I tend to get kind of lazy with the mixing. And if I only have that many colors, I have to mix more aggressively. And I think I paint better when I'm mixing more. Because in retrospect, when I look at how I used to mix when I was much younger, I didn't really mix that much. And I think that was a real drawback and probably why my colors were not very sophisticated at the time. And sounds like Blue is doing some drawing at the same time. We love being your podcast, everybody, in the studio with you. Zan likes vermilion. I like how Janet Cruising says, favorite I cannot spell, but it is a long word. Well, we're going to have to figure out what that red is. Edie is asking, what motivates you to be so productive, please? I confess that I think a lot of the time, the reason I stay so busy is so I don't get depressed. I know that's not really, a very inspirational way to talk about being motivated and productive, but it's sort of true because I'm the type of person, I have a lot of trouble sitting still. And it's strange when I go on vacation, I like chilling out, it's fine, but it's only fine for about a day. And then after that, I get a little stir crazy and I want to be doing something. And so I found that I get a little stir crazy. And so I have to stay productive to not go nuts feeling so angsty about things. And I will say that sometimes I feel like making work is almost a way of me being sort of compulsive about things, where it just bothers me so much to not do anything that I preempt all of that anxiety by just doing things all the time. Because I really am better when I'm busy. I know not everybody is like that, but that's one of the reasons I do so much, is I just can't sit still. And sounds like Sabrina is painting on the run. Jen is editing in Photoshop, going to enter a local spring show, got to make 4 pieces in about a month. I'd love to hear from people. How many of you guys have showed your work somewhere, whether it was at a fair or an exhibition, school, gallery, whatever? I'm always interested in that because I think a lot of the times artwork feels like it doesn't really have much of an endpoint. And having some kind of showing like that, it's very satisfying. See this piece, it's framed. I mean, not all artwork has to be framed, but it's that moment you see it on the wall and it just feels real. It's an odd thing because sometimes in my studio, it's just there and it just doesn't feel like that big of a deal. And then you put it on that wall and all of a sudden it becomes this achievement. It's really lovely. Auntie says, is there a drawing book you'd recommend for absolute beginners? I think the book I really like, I'm trying to see if it's on my shelf. It's not right now. A really comprehensive drawing book is called Drawing Structure and Vision. And it was written by 2 of my colleagues, one of whom was my former professor, Fritz Drury, at RISD. But I don't think it's great for beginners. It's a little bit dense and not so easy to do. So actually, maybe people can say in the chat, any beginning books. I know a lot of people like Loomis. He's not really my cup of tea, but I know Jordan really likes his books. And has anybody here read, what's that classic one? I think it's called Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain or something. But that's historically been a very popular book. And I think that one is more for beginners, but maybe some of you guys can make suggestions. Because honestly, while drawing books are good to have, I just think they can't compete with video in some ways, because so much of drawing is physical and so much of it is watching somebody draw. And so one thing I used to do a lot when I was teaching classes at RISD is I would say to students, watch me draw, but I don't want you to watch what I'm drawing. Like, don't pay attention to the drawing I'm doing, but just look at what I do with my face, how I move my arm. And it's like people start to realize that it's not all in your wrist, because I think oftentimes people are just drawing with their wrist and that's it. But really, when I've drawn the figure, I mean, I'm moving my elbow, my shoulder gets tired. It's a real workout. And that's something you just can't get in a book, which I think is really critical to learn for beginners. Oh, that's it, quinacridone. Yes. I actually have not really used the quinacridone colors very much. I mean, after going to Guerra Paint, you guys may have seen Guerra Paint is an amazing paint store in Brooklyn, New York. And I released a couple reels and we were just going all out about color, and quinacridone has come up a couple times. So who here uses quinacridone colors? Because I don't use them at all. Lisa says, busy is nice, but naps are nice too. Yes. I miraculously got 8 hours of sleep last night. And I woke up this morning, I was like, I'm not in a bad mood. I actually feel kind of positive about life. Sabrina says, finishing up my portfolio for applications, I'm really nervous. Oh, it's so hard, Sabrina. I think making a portfolio is challenging, but I think more than half the battle is that headspace you have to be in and feeling like, oh, things are so definitive. You get in or you don't get in. And I always feel so bad because usually around this time is when a lot of the school admissions results are coming out. And inevitably, I know a lot of students who I have worked with in the past, and they'll email me about what happened. And it's so hard because some of them people are delighted they got in, and other people feel crushed. So it's a really tough season for a lot of people because it's just so many highs and so many lows. And okay, so PM says natural way to draw. I don't think I've seen that book. Okay, so Edie says by Kimon, I don't know how to say it, Nicolaides. Okay. All right, Anna says drawing on the right side of the brain. I use the exercises while teaching a lot. That's fantastic. Oh, Susan says also, Right Side of the Brain by Betty Edwards. The companion workbook is a good start for beginners. Fantastic. I guess I better get some of these books and read them so I can help people with that. But it is really nice to have books around. They are helpful. Minette says, I'm trying to connect with more local artists. Tonight was a gallery night and I wanted to go, but I get stressed going to new places, especially not knowing what parking is like and crowds. Oh my gosh, I hate parking. I'm the same way. I get stressed. Like if I don't know the parking situation, I'm the type of person I'll just go to the concert like 2 hours early because I'm so stressed about parking. I hate it. And my spouse is different. He's like, we'll find parking. I'm like, no, this is really stressful. But to your point, Manette, about getting stressed going to new places, meeting new people, because there is a social aspect of being an artist that is difficult. And I will tell you guys that it's okay if you don't jive with your local community, because it's hard to find a space where you really feel included, where you feel people are supportive and there to help you. It's actually not that easy. And I have found some local groups can be really clicky. I'm like, dude, I did not want to go back to middle school. There was one group I joined. I think I was living in Boston at the time. And I went to one meeting and it was supposed to be a critique group. And oh my gosh, 20 minutes in, I was like, I don't belong here. This is the wrong jive for me. And so it takes some time. And so, Minette, I would just say if you go to a place and it doesn't really work for you, that's okay. It's nothing to do with you. It's totally a social thing. And honestly, I have no interest in recreating my seventh grade social experience. Brandon says, do you have any advice for connecting art to your self-worth? Drawing is the only thing I'm really good at. So whenever a drawing doesn't go well, it affects my productivity. Totally makes sense to me because it's so important to you. And I think a lot of people, we need something like that in our lives where we have a certain degree of competence. Because when I was a kid, I mean, I did okay academically, but I wasn't great at it. And drawing was the safe space for me. I knew I was good at it. And I think that was a really big confidence boost for me. And I know some kids don't have that. And it's very difficult to find yourself in that way. I would say try the best you can not to say your artwork is you. I know that's really hard to do because obviously we are inherently a part of the work we make. But the thing is, as you grow as an artist and as you hear things about how you can improve, because maybe you're hearing advice from other people or something like that, it is important to separate. For example, one thing that I told students all the time, because we had so many critiques in art school, and a lot of times it's very easy to take it personally, of course. Who hasn't done that before? And I really tried to explain to students, listen, you are not your drawing. We're critiquing the drawing, we're not critiquing you as a person. And I think that is important to have some degree of separation because, oh boy, if I let that happen, I would just be so upset all day long. I have so many pieces that feel like they're about to fall off the cliff. And a lot of it is being persistent and sticking it out. When there's a drawing you do, you don't like the way it's going, to push through that. A lot of people don't do that. I mean, here's confession time. How many people here, confession time, when you get frustrated with something, you just abandon it? Or do you say, oh, I hate it, let's just keep going? Most people have a hard time doing that. It's not easy at all when things are not going well. And so oftentimes, like I was doing these workshops last weekend, and some people were saying, oh, this is a fail, I didn't do a good job with this. And I'll say, it's not a fail, you're just not done yet. It's a work in progress. And so oftentimes we try to render judgment on a drawing when it's still in progress. And that's when we've just decided, oh, it's all over. And instead just saying, you know something, it's not where I want it to be yet, but I'm gonna stick around and see if I can do that. So I would really try to separate that, because it is very difficult if you let your self-worth be invested in your artwork. And, oh, Anna's asking about the printmaking event. So if people don't know, and I'm so grateful to our amazing community who made this possible, I am flying to Providence on Sunday, and I'm going to be going to the Southern Graphics Council conference. Southern Graphics is a huge printmaking organization, and they are sponsoring this annual conference, like mega printmaking conference, just hundreds of printmakers in one place. And this is an incredible conference. There's a materials fair, there are tours, there are printmaking demonstrations, there's lectures and panels. It's amazing. I can't wait to go. But I guess what I'm looking forward to the most are actually the materials fair. I mean, there's all these cool demos that I want to see that are sort of obscure techniques. I'm really excited to film maybe some lithography stuff, because I've talked about lithography here, but I've never actually been able to offer any kind of visual to explain what that does. But the materials fair, oh God, just picture every major printmaking manufacturer is in one giant convention hall, and they all brought supplies, and you can talk to them and touch stuff, and oh my God. Last time I went, which was 20 years ago, I just bought these two burnishers because I didn't bring a lot of money, but oh man, I got a credit card now. So we'll see. Edie says, is it worth dealing with galleries when the internet has democratized access to the market? It depends on the artist. I mean, there's such a huge world of galleries. And so even within galleries, there are different types of galleries. I mean, there is a pocket of the New York City art world, which is in Chelsea. And those are extremely high profile galleries. I mean, talk about places like Gagosian or what's her name? I'm totally forgetting her name. Mary something. Mary Boone. That's her name. Really, I mean, those are the most powerful art dealers of the world. There are some in other places, of course, but just particularly in New York. And that is a very different kind of visibility than if you are showing your work on Instagram. Because it's interesting, I know a lot of people who show in pretty high profile art galleries in New York who have zero Instagram presence. And for them, they don't need Instagram because they have the gallery to do that. And the thing about galleries that's very important to distinguish is that they have client lists. They have collectors they already have established relationships with. And that's oftentimes very hard to find, because the thing about Instagram is, yes, the galleries are on there, but the collectors, they're hard to find. It's not like you can look up art collector. A lot of it is who you know, and the art gallery scene plugs you right into that. So certainly the internet has helped provide more different types of opportunities. But let's say you have a goal, you want to show at a place like Gagosian or something like that, you really need that personal connection. I hate to say that that is the way the gallery system works, but it is. You can't send your portfolio to a gallery. You can't DM a gallery saying, here's my portfolio, please give me a show. It's just, it takes a long time And a lot of it, most of it is who you know. So it's a very enclosed system, but that's one pocket. I mean, there's all kinds of galleries in other places. There are galleries that are more local and that operate on a much smaller scale. And so the internet has helped, but there definitely are pockets of the art world that still have iron gates in front of them and are very much about who you know. And let's see. And Susan says, I go to small local markets, just having people see my work, tell me how much they like it, seems to make me feel validated, even if they don't buy it. Yeah. I think a lot of artists in general, and tell me if you guys feel this way, we just want to be seen. We just want people to say they saw our work. Because it's interesting, a lot of people in our Discord, because we have critique channels, will oftentimes worry, oh, well, I'm a beginner. I don't have a ton of experience. I feel like it's not fair for me to critique somebody's work in the Discord. And I disagree with that. I think all artists are happy to have somebody see their work and take the time to write something thoughtful and engaging. I think we all appreciate that. And I don't think if somebody gave me a comment like that and took the time to look at my work, I would say, you're a beginner. I don't want to hear what you have to say. I mean, maybe some people do. I have no idea. But I think for the most part, a lot of us love that acknowledgement. I know for a lot of people, when someone buys your work, it's just the most amazing thing. It's like, wow, what? I don't know. Every time somebody buys work from me, I'm like, really? It's just because selling has not been my big thing. I don't spend a lot of time trying to do it. But I think you're right, Susan, that we need that validation in whatever form it comes in order to have that feeling of satisfaction that we're getting something out of it. Otherwise, we feel like we're just making work in a vacuum. And oh yes, Mary Boone did go to prison. Yes. I think her gallery is still operating though, and I think she's back. Maybe somebody can Google it, but yes, she did go to prison. So yes, the art world is it's not a very nice place sometimes. Anna's asking, what do you think is your favorite printmaking medium? Oh dear, you're making me pick. I feel like probably monotype. But the thing is, I wonder if that's because I've done more monotypes. I've done some intaglio, but honestly, I have not dug into intaglio to the degree that I would like to. Lithography too, I barely touched it. I just took a class in art school. And so I don't know that I have a favorite one because I don't feel like I've really experienced it. Like I was really excited about aquatint, but I barely touched it because it was just in this introductory class. I did do some aquatints later with a technique called sugar lift. And so there I was able to do some more aquatint, but I want to do aquatint like Goya. So if any of you guys know, there's a series of prints that Goya did. It's called The Disasters of War. And they're basically done with line etching and aquatint. And I always look at those and think, oh, aquatint. I need to get it back. I need to do it again. But I haven't had the chance because I don't have access to a facility at this time. Uma says, an instructor at art school once scolded the student saying, it's like you guys never had a bad day. Students were cocky and we needed to understand we can't perform well every day. Oh, nobody can. No chance. I mean, that's where I think sometimes we have unrealistic expectations for our work, where people will say to me, I did a drawing today and it's worse than the one I did yesterday. That's going to happen. It's sort of like you think about someone who's training for Olympics. They're not going to just do perfect dives the whole time. They're going to do a lot of terrible dives. And that's just part of the training. Okay, so Anna says, went to prison for tax evasion. And I do believe she's back. Maybe somebody can look that up. And this is a very good point from Lisa. Gallery managers can be a great source of commercial crit. They know what sells in their world. Yes, they have knowledge of the industry. So oftentimes, a lot of artists, including myself, would be like, oh, I don't want to do all that marketing. I don't want to schmooze with people and do all that stuff. Well, that's what the gallery does for you. You have industry professionals who know that inside out, who make it possible for you to not worry about that, which is a pretty big difference. And Luis says, Clara, have you ever had a student visit one of your art exhibits, et cetera? Do they get brownie points? Yeah, I'm fortunate now I don't have to deal with grades or anything like that anymore. I'm so happy to not do with that. Yeah, but many times I've had that, especially when I had my shows locally. For example, I had a show in Rhode Island. It was at the Brown Hillel Gallery, and a lot of students came to that because it was just right up the hill. And that was really nice. But actually, one student who I remember who really made a major effort to come to my show, it was my first solo show. It was at the Danforth Museum in Framingham, Mass. When was that? Maybe that was like 2006 or something. But I had a student at School of the Museum of Fine Arts, and Framingham is really far from where that school is. Like, you have to drive for 40 minutes. And I hadn't seen her for many, many years. And she came to the show, and I just thought it was the most lovely thing ever. So it's so great. I mean, I love it when students come back and tell me what they've been doing. Sometimes I remember them, sometimes I don't. Oh gosh, the worst thing is when people ask me, for a student, for a letter of recommendation, and I can't remember who they are. I feel so bad, but I have to tell them. I say, I'm sorry, I don't remember you enough to be able to write you a legit letter. But I mean, that's what happens when you've taught as long as I have. And Jana says, I actually just entered a juried show at a local art center, first time. Become a member too. That's a big time for me. Oh, that's fantastic. Congratulations, Janice. Yeah. So another option for people in terms of showing your work regularly would be to join an artist co-op. Those are probably easier to find in bigger cities. But one of my friends is in this co-op in Boston. It's called the Boston Sculptors Gallery. It's a really nice gallery. And if you get accepted, you have to get accepted. You can't just join, for the most part. I mean, there probably are places like that, but usually the expectation is you get juried. And so you get membership in the co-op, and that usually entitles you to say, I think at Boston Sculptors, you get a solo show once every 2 or 3 years. And so it's like guaranteed that you will be able to show. And they oftentimes have monthly things that you have to do, like gallery sit, and they have member meetings. And usually there's some kind of membership fee that is monthly. But those are really good experiences. I never did one before, but I know some people really get a lot out of those communities. And Frank says, how do you deal with letting your art go, like as a gift or sale, and you really like the finished piece, but know you have to let it go? Well, you don't have to. You can certainly have work that you just decide you don't want to sell. But I think it just gets easier with time. And also, if you get to my point where your closets are just like bursting with artwork, at a certain point, you got to let go. I mean, I have a lot of artwork that I gave away at a yard sale. And I just knew I couldn't hang on to it. So usually what I recommend, Frank, is I document the work really well. I'll just take a lot of photographs. And so to me, that oftentimes is enough. I can say, well, I have a record of that piece, and now I'm moving on to these other things, which I think is okay. And we also have Ellie, who says, how do I get better at reference drawing? Ellie, if you could follow up and let me know what you mean by that. Do you mean drawing from a reference photo or from something else? And I'll take your question when we come back. Brandon says, do you have a creative outlet outside of painting and drawing, something else outside of work to prevent burnout? I used to, for many, many years, I used to play in an orchestra. There was a community orchestra where I lived in Boston that actually was really good. There are a lot of people in there who are fantastic musicians, and it was actually conducted by someone who was a violinist in the Boston Symphony. So even though it was a community orchestra, it was like really hardcore, and I actually had to stop eventually because it was just so time consuming, because they had so many concerts and all these rehearsals, and I did it for a very long time. But when art prof started to take over my life, I had to step away. But I do like, when I can, I haven't done it in a long time, but sometimes I'll just pull up my oboe and just practice. I mean, not to get better, but just to play. And I wish I had more time for that. It's hard right now because I've got two teenagers who I cannot believe are more time consuming than little kids. I never imagined that could be possible. And we also have information on, oh, I just missed it. Well, here's a comment from Gargi. I feel pretty selfish when I make time to paint. I feel the same way, actually. And most of the time, I always feel like there's something else more important. Oh, I should be trying to ramp up our revenue. I need to be more organized with this part of the business. And it's hard for me to justify going to paint, something I'm not going to get paid for, versus doing something else, which is critical to be running Art Prof. Because as much as we give away things for free, we are a business. And I do have to do a lot of spreadsheets and stuff. And it just always feels more important. And so actually, that's one of the reasons, from a selfish point of view, I've been having so much fun with open studios. And we do have it so every member in our Discord gets one free session. And I would recommend you guys check this out, because it's a very chill voice session. You get to chat with me, get advice, get critiques on your artwork. And you know, it's helped me because I have a hard time, like you said, Gargi, remembering to give myself that time. So when it's open studios time, I'm like, gotta go make some art. It's actually really convenient. It keeps me accountable. And I'm like, yes, I have that time. It's blocked out. I have to do it because it's part of my job. It's actually fantastic. Chris says, you seem very level-headed. Well, I hope so. I tried. How do you deal with art snobs who think they are the best thing since sliced bread? It's really hard. I think I try to avoid toxic people, which is probably why I left academia, which is packed with snots and people who think they're better than you. I mean, I just always felt like it was a competition, because there were times I'd just be sitting in the faculty lounge eating lunch or something, and these people would come into the lounge and be like, so I have three shows coming up next month. And I'm sitting there going, I don't care. Like, can you just talk to me? Like, can you not just throw that in my face? Like, I'm not exaggerating. People would do stuff like that. And I also had people who were nice to me when I was directing the gallery at Wellesley College. I was like, wow, you're being very nice to me. This is very strange. And then I was like, oh, you want something from me? Okay. It's like, you can sniff that out in 2 seconds. But it's hard to avoid. I think it's important to find the people that do support you, because you are going to encounter tricky situations. For example, I had this horrible thing happen to me in academia where I had a review meeting, is what they called it, to talk about my performance. And I was about to leave, you guys. My contract was over. I had 3 tenured faculty, and they sat me down and they talked to me for an hour about everything they thought I had done wrong. I mean, I burst into tears after that meeting. It was so awful. And so I asked one of my former professors, I was like, what did I do? Is this normal? What? And he was like, no, they bullied you. And so I needed him to reassure me that I was not the crazy one. And so we need people like that in our lives who we can come to and say, oh, this person was so rude. because sometimes I think it's me. I'm like, oh my God, I did something to make that person mad. But then you tell somebody else and you realize, oh, they're the jerk. It has nothing to do with me. So I think it's important to identify who are people in my life that want me to succeed? Who are people who are going to support me? And I hope we are that resource for you guys, that you know when me and the staff look at your work and we interact with you on Discord, that we want you to succeed. We're not people who want to cut you down. That wouldn't be a very helpful educational platform, but I really do feel that way about everybody we interact with here. Like, I want to see you succeed. And you have to find people like that wherever they are. Edie says, what computer programs do you recommend for an artist to have for business purposes? Really depends. It's so different depending on the field, depending on the person. People use software in such different ways. I can tell you, I wish people would stop using Microsoft Word because that program drives me bats, but it's hard to give something specific. I can tell you what I use. I use Google Drive like crazy. My whole life is in Google Drive, and I use Photoshop. I have Video Leap, which is a app that I have on my phone for editing. I also have a captions app for putting captions on videos. I use Premiere a lot. So I do get the Creative Suite for my staff and everything. And I'm sure there's a bunch of other things I'm forgetting about, but yeah, really, really depends. What is useful for me may not be useful for somebody else. And this is very important from Slate. If you feel guilty about making art, then think of it as self-care. Make yourself a tea or coffee and enjoy. Yeah, I feel the same. It's just doing it. It's hard. I'm like, I know all these things. I know it's, I don't know. It's hard. So much guilt. Do you guys feel like you have artist guilt? I definitely do. Like, oh, I should. But the thing is, you drive yourself crazy. At a certain point, you just have to blast Moulin Rouge in your office and turn it all off. Usually it's just the stuff that's going on in my head can drive me crazy. And so I have to just focus and find something. And Janice says, oh God, I hated those talks with administrators back when I taught high school, who knew zip about teaching languages, but thought they'd school me. So glad to be gone from that. Oh, it's insufferable when people try to tell you how to do things. I think a big part of it in terms of being a teacher, because we've had a couple of videos where I just was wrong. For example, oh, so embarrassing. There's a video with me and Deep D. We were at MoMA and we were looking at these Elizabeth Catlett prints and also a sculpture. And the very, I'm like, oh, it's Elizabeth Cartlett. It's like so embarrassing. And then later I was like, oh my gosh, I said it wrong. And there's always people who comment, how can you be a professor? This is so embarrassing. And I just think that teaching is an organic thing. It's always changing. Teachers have to make mistakes. And I think the worst thing is when you have a teacher who, number one, won't admit the mistake, and number two, won't try to fix it. Because I had this graduate student in art school. She was teaching an intaglio printmaking class, and I had some question for her, and I asked her, and she just said, I don't know. It's like, that's it? How about I'll go look it up and tell you later? I just could not believe it. I was like, that's the end. Like, I mean, even if I go look it up, and I still don't get, I'll say to the student, listen, I looked it up. I'm not really sure. Sorry about that. I wish I could give you a better answer. But I don't know. Maybe it's just laziness. I have no idea. It's a funny thing. But I'm the first to admit that I make mistakes. It's just who you are when you're just channeling this much information. It's really, really difficult. And Slate says, I have the worst artist guilt about not making art. Well, that's the other side of it, is I just can't get rid of these projects that are just sitting around. I can't, and I know I can finish them. But yeah, there's a lot of that. I mean, we were talking earlier about how to stay productive. But within that, there's also these lulls where, has anybody ever had that feeling where you're like, I know I should do this, I finally have time, and you're like, I don't want to do it. It stinks. Or, you know, what's the worst is I'll carve out this chunk of time. I'm like, all righty, I'm doing it. And then my kid calls and needs to be picked up or something. I'm like, oh my God, you guys are destroying my life. So that's another part of it that is very different. Yes, Chris says, you admitted that in the video. Not everyone can know everything. Just say, whoops. Yes, that is very easy for me to do that. I have no problem. It also helps when you're older and you're just like, I could care less. I really don't. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons I can tolerate all the comments is because I just don't care. So pick my brain, everybody. What do you want to know? Because actually, you know what's very funny? I had such a great experience where this YouTube channel I watch, I don't watch a lot of YouTube channels, but I watch this one religiously. So actually, I'd love to hear, out of all the YouTube channels you guys watch, which is one you watch all the time? Like this guy, every time he puts out a video, I'm like, boom, I'm watching it. So it's Nick Nimmin, and he has this fantastic YouTube education channel. So I watch it for updates and different things. He's so good. He just like gets you the information, doesn't delay any of that. And so I saw one day he was live. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to go onto his live stream and I'm going to ask him about my channel. And it was just the coolest thing. I was like, oh my God, Nick Nimmin is talking about my channel. It was just such a funny experience for me because usually I'm on the other end taking questions. And in retrospect, I wish I tried that sooner because then you really start to understand what is the experience that my audience is really having. And that's one of the reasons that I rely on all of you so much to tell me what to make. Most of the videos that we make, I would never have thought to make, but I make it because somebody asks me this question and I realize, oh my gosh, that question is going to take a really long time to answer. I can't type that out into an email. And so I make a video and it helps that person, also serves all these other people as well. And Susan says, have you seen Jono Dry, graphic artist? I have not. See, that's the thing, is I'm on YouTube and I really just don't watch a lot of YouTubers. Looks like Jen has a dermatologist I watch every day. She's got easy skincare tips. That's great. Actually, this is not YouTube, but Alex Rowe, who used to be a teaching artist here, he told me that he followed a mortician on Instagram. Oh my God. I mean, one of my favorite shows is 6 Feet Under, but I was like, I don't think I could see the real thing. Like, but Alex was very funny. He had very morbid taste in certain things. And so that's one of the reasons he did these ink wash drawings and they were all about the plague in the Middle Ages. I mean, I just love that about him. Chantilly says, clearing a large enough block of time is the most difficult thing. I'm slow to warm up the art part of my brain. And once I start, I have to keep the momentum going. Oh, I always tell myself that the first 20 minutes of me working on something don't count because it takes time. You have to settle into your rhythm and that doesn't always happen immediately. Plus, sometimes you need to get a cookie first. Jen is asking, is more expensive gesso any better than the cheaper kind? People online say it makes a difference, but I've been told by people I know it doesn't. I think it does. You know why? Because I've used crappy gesso and it stinks. I think it was Frederick's gesso. Well, so I had two experiences with Frederick gesso. I was in art school and I was like, oh, it'd be nice to not pay that much for gesso. And so I bought this Frederick's gesso. It was so runny. I could not believe it. And I just found it had no body at all. I mean, I just didn't like how thin it was. I'm used to gesso having some body to it, and that was really bad. But I feel like I shouldn't say negative things about manufacturers, but I think you guys should know. Another time I got gesso from Frederick's. It was in a big gallon because the company had given me some. And when we poured it out, I'm not kidding, it looked like cottage cheese. It was so bizarre. And so, yes, buy the good gesso. It really actually does matter. Visual Sweets says, I've been creating art since I was 10. Live in fear of sharing my art. I fear I would be rejected. Oh, I think it's very hard to share your work with people, especially if you've never done it before. Tell me in the chat, how many of you guys have had that moment where you're like, oh my God, I don't want to share. It's so nerve-wracking and I'm worried about people saying something rude or rejecting me. Tell me about that, because I think we'll see that no artist has not had that experience. But I will tell you, Visual Sweets, that it is important to share in the right place, because there are definitely spaces to share that are not ideal. For example, if you're feeling nervous, sharing on Instagram is not a good idea, because that's the public. Anybody can see it. I mean, granted, if you don't have a huge following, it's probably not that much of a risk. But I think one of the reasons Instagram stresses people out is because it is public and you do feel sort of exposed, even if not that many people see it. So one thing that people tell me all the time is that actually they really are fine sharing their work in our Discord, because number one, it's not public. I mean, anybody can join and it's not anything that costs anything, but that people in our Discord are not there to impress anybody. They're there to learn, because it's a learning space. And so in a learning space, we're not trying to pump out masterpieces. And in fact, in a lot of the spaces, Patreon group and workshops, I'll say to people, you know, I want to see that crummy first 10 minutes. And I tell people, show it to us. Show us your crummy first couple minutes so we can all see that it starts from nothing. And you would never share that on social media. Those first 5 minutes of a drawing, nobody would be very interested. But in a learning space, people are, because it's informative to see how rough things are look at the beginning. And so I would recommend, before you share your work, Visual Sweets, make sure it's in a space with people who, like I said before, want you to succeed and are going to encourage you. Because in our Discord, we have fantastic moderators, like Blue Wolf is a moderator. And we are ruthless about kicking out jerks. So if anybody comes in and they're a jerk, we just get rid of them really fast. And not all art servers are like that. I mean, there are some art servers which are not very well moderated. And so the chances of somebody saying something rude to you is quite high. If that ever happened to our server, we would boot them so fast. And we also have a question with Lisa. What's the best way to hide the ugly backside of a drawing on paper? The front is nice, but the back has a meh scribble. Do you mean in terms of displaying it? Like if you were to hang it on the wall? Because in general, people don't usually care about the back. So you're probably fine. But yeah, if you want to follow up, Lisa, with some more specifics, happy to follow up. Cool. So we have a lot of channel suggestions. And Shell says, I have been learning human anatomy through Art Prof, laughing and drawing at the same time. Thank you for making all the tutorials. Well, guess what, you guys? I'm not going to do it this week because I'm going to Providence. And then I'm going to LA, which I'm very excited about, because you know something? I've never been to the museums in LA ever. And I can't wait to go to the Getty. Oh my gosh, who here has been to the Getty? I'm curious. But I am just dying to go to the Getty. But anyways, everybody see that skeleton? I'm going to revamp the anatomy series. So of course we have the one we already have, but wow, it is such a difference when I can just hold up a skull and I can actually touch the zygomatic arch. That's so different than when I'm showing you a slide. And here I can really show you that, wow, there is a big pocket here, and there's a big pocket here. And so that's where the muscles are going to be covering. So I'm looking forward to doing that. I just need to gain an extra 30 days a week. Maybe I'll get something done. I think there should be one day a week where nobody's allowed to bother you. I need that. And Y Bricks says, that's why I hate when people ask you, how long did that take you? I know people ask that a lot, but I'm sorry to tell you guys, people don't really care how long you spent. I mean, maybe some people care. And sometimes online people say I spent this amount of time, but ultimately I'm more interested in the work. The amount of time is not huge. I do find that online people like numbers. I know this from the algorithms. And so somebody writes, I spent 100 hours on this portrait, that people are likely to click on it because they like the concreteness of the number. But I think from the artist's point of view, it's not really that important. Edie says, how often do you go out to press the flesh with other art industry professionals? I wish I could do it all the time. It's just as expensive. The only reason I'm able to go to Southern Graphics is because all of you helped me raise the funding to go. There's actually this another conference somebody told me about. I think it's next spring or something. Can't remember the name, but it's for art retailers talking to manufacturers. I was like, oh my God, because honestly, the supply stuff is the best. Like at the conference, there'll be panel discussions and everything, but it's terrible. I confess they're not that exciting. I mean, unless I really, really like the speaker, I usually find the demonstrations and the materials fair way more fun. Edie saying, how often do you go out to network with other art industry professionals? Oh, is that the same question? I mean, one thing I can tell you guys is that this idea of networking, it's not as formal as we think it is. It's actually sometimes most effective when it's very low-key and casual. So let me tell you guys a story. So I think you guys know I've been thinking about doing freelance illustration and stuff like that. And so there are a bunch of art directors and a couple of other creatives who I have been looking at on Instagram. And so I started following them. And I find the mistake with networking is people will ask for something first. And I get that all the time. People will contact me and say, can I have this? Can you help me with this? I'm like, why would I help you? You're some random person. I never talked to you before. And actually, if you just leave regular comments, I try to make ones that are a little more intelligent. I don't just write cool. I'll write something like, oh, I really love the red that's in this design. And it's real, you know, I'm not saying that just to say something. And there's this one artist who is very established. And I was like, oh, he's never gonna reply. And he was so nice. He replied to all my comments and he sent me some DMs because I asked him a couple questions about paint. And that's how you do it. You don't like network. You just find people you like. You have casual conversations. I mean, you don't want to do it too aggressively. Like I definitely space out my comments because it's a little aggressive if you do too much at once. But I think a lot of people don't realize that networking is just talking to people and not making it about networking. Because the second I feel that somebody is just trying to get something out of me, I'm not interested at all. I've had people just come up to me and just hand me a business card. I'm like, why would I want to talk to you? You didn't even say hello. You just gave me your business card. Do you think I'm going to set you up now? And so that's what people don't see is that actually making a comment about somebody's dog can actually lead to something. And I did get a bunch of art directors to follow me. I was very proud of that. And I didn't do it in a creepy way. So it's definitely, you can do stuff like that. Okay. Great comments, everybody. And Chantilly Cat, it was mislabeled cottage cheese. And Jen says, still nervous about sharing my art. It's not where I want it to be yet. And it feels embarrassing. I can also remind you guys that, and I'm trying to say this as a word of comfort is that people oftentimes are not paying as much attention to you as you think they are. I know that doesn't make it feel any less nerve-wracking, but I think that was something I didn't realize when I was younger. And now that I'm older and I just do dumb stuff and there's no consequence for it, I realize, oh, nobody cared. And it's actually very nice to see that people really are not paying attention to me that much. Jerry is asking, what surface do you draw on with your lithographic rubbing ink blocks, paper? I've done it on a couple different things. I have done little studies on charcoal paper. I really like Strathmore charcoal paper because it has a texture to it. It makes a really beautiful mark with the crayon. The big drawings I've done have been on Duralar, which is sort of like acetate. It's very, very thick though. I actually had it special ordered from the RISD store. The manager ordered it for me. So I'm actually not sure you can get that in retail stores. But what I would do is I'd take the Duralar and I would sand it. And we have a short where I talk about that if you guys want to take a look at that. Oh, Emmett says the Getty is amazing. I don't even really know what's there. I mean, I've used their collection online because they have really great resources. I was looking at these wonderful Robert Mapplethorpe photographs, but I'm very, very excited. Ooh, they have a special drawing gallery. Oh, you know what I should do? So a lot of people don't know you can do this, but museums oftentimes have a print room. There's one at the Met. I went to it when I was in graduate school. The RISD Museum has a print room and you can make an appointment and you can request pieces. You can say, I want to see Albrecht Dürer's Adam and Eve engraving. And they just pull it up and the work is right there. And it's very different because in the galleries, everything's behind glass. And this is like, somebody just put this Dürer engraving 3 inches from my face and it's right there. I should see if I could do that because most museums do have that option, but a lot of people don't know that you can do that. Why Brick says, when I took your charcoal workshop, I was so excited about my final project, shared it on Facebook. Don't really share on Facebook. I realized there are about 50 people viewed, but only 6 people commented. It kind of broke my heart. Oh, I'm sorry that was a negative experience for you. But I can tell you that on social media, especially Facebook, I've noticed recently, a lot of the times, the only things people react to are awful things. And sometimes when you have a post that is not there to like stir the pot, it oftentimes does not get a lot of attention. I mean, I quit Facebook a long time ago. We still have a page. But you know, it's interesting on our page, we've gotten some nice comments, but we've also gotten some not so nice comments that we typically don't get on Instagram. And so I would just remember that the way something performs on social media has nothing to do with the quality. Because I've had pieces that I posted on my Instagram, had these series of drawings drawn on tissue paper, and they didn't really get much reaction, but I actually won a grant from those drawings. And so totally different audiences. And so don't place any value on how the work performs on social media. Here's an example. We have reels that we will cross post over platforms. So we'll post the same short on TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram. It's so common that one video that bombs on one platform will do really well on the other. And that's not to say that, oh, your work sucks. It's like, no, the algorithm just didn't push it. And so just always remember, you guys, don't put any value on your work based on the social media performance. And Melanie says, in LA, you could visit Luna Luna, a reborn art carnival from, oh, I read about that. It was in the New York Times. Yeah, I saw some photos. I didn't look that deep into it, but that would be really fun. I'll have to see. I'm spending just a few days there, but we will see. And Blue Wolf says, anything that is embarrassing is just not done yet. You just keep working on it. Sometimes the advice is that simple. You just keep working. It's very boring advice. I wish I could say something more spectacular, but sometimes it's just that you have to do. Sometimes people feel like they need to have fancy advice, but I don't think that's true. Edie says, have you found it easier to sell your work and for a higher price if it's framed? Again, it depends on the context, because in a gallery, you can't show the work unframed at a good gallery. I'm not saying something that's very low budget or something like that. But online, I tell people, don't get your work framed before you sell it, because inevitably there's going to be somebody who buys it and doesn't like the frame you have, take it off, and they're going to buy a new one anyway, in which case that's sort of a waste of money on your part that you bought this frame and somebody replaced it anyway. So I don't think it's necessary to frame. Yes, the broad. Oh, God, you guys, I'm so excited. I wish I could just travel the world and go to art supply stores and museums and paint. I mean, that's my pipe dream, is Clara's Art Adventures, my Netflix show that I'm dreaming about. We'll see. And Brandon says, how do you deal with feeling like you are failing as an artist or worrying if you started drawing too late? I started drawing again at 19, often have anxiety that I started too late. I think you'll find, and maybe some of you guys who've had this experience can say in the chat, first of all, it's never too late. It's not like you're being an athlete. You know, if you're an athlete, yes, your body changes and you probably can't play Major League Baseball when you're 80. But as an artist, it's never too late. And I just think this idea that you have to start at a certain age to be a good artist, I don't think it's true at all. And so I know a lot of people in our community, they had whole careers in other fields for decades and came to art when they were 70, when they were 80. And sure, it's like, yeah, you didn't start sooner, but in some ways, what's interesting is I've had a lot of people who are 18 or 19, and they will say to me, you know what? I'm really good at this technique. I don't know what to make art about. That's really common. And I find that the people who start later, they have so much they want to make art about. Maybe they feel like their skill set is not where it is, but skill is not everything. There are a lot of artists who don't exhibit spectacular skill and make fantastic work. If you guys have never seen Billy's Balloon by Don Hertzfeld, you should look it up. I mean, it's a literal stick figure, the funniest animation I ever seen in my life. So never think that skills are, number one, the most important thing, or number two, that they can carry you as an artist, because that's not true. I think that if you can paint a pear well, that's great. But guess what? There's a lot of people in the world that can paint a pear well, and there's probably a lot that can do it way better than me. And so you have to ask yourself, what is the thing I really want to do? Because the technique thing, I think people get very, very stressed out about it. And I just don't think it's remotely as important as people think it is. Yes, so we see a lot of people in the chat talking about that. And I understand the concern, but you are definitely not too late at all. All right, because you guys are on the live stream, you get to find out a few hours earlier from everybody else that we have open registration for our May and June workshops. So take a look at that link. It is on the front page of artprof.org and also in the YouTube video description below. We do have space in drawing hands and feet, color palettes, imaginary landscapes. We do not have a Discord chat. Sorry, I need to change that slide. Sorry about that. There's no Discord chat after Friday streams. Join our Patreon group. This is a place where you can get weekly voice sessions with staff, critiques from me, and also support in a small group of artists. Art Prof has services. We have editing, portfolio critiques, artist calls, and Art Prof has a podcast. It's available on Spotify and also on iTunes. Go to artprof.org. There's tons of content on there that is not on YouTube. And subscribe to our channel for more tutorials, critiques, and business tips. Everybody, thank you so much for watching. I'll see you next time. Bye.